Welcome. You are listening to a recording provided for the use of those who are blind and or print impaired. Materials or items read on Airs LA and the Los Angeles Radio Reading Service are the copyrighted property of the original authors and publishers. No unauthorized use or duplication is permitted. Welcome to episode 349 of Green and Growing in the Garden, the weekly gardening program developed for the Los Angeles Radio Reading Service. I'm Hugh Ralston, your host and producer, and I look forward to sharing with you over the next 40 minutes updates to our local garden scenes and recent articles about gardens, plants, and designers, both in California and around the world. Gardens are in my DNA. I was raised in a family of gardeners, and my grandparents and mother handed down a love of flowers, of orchids, and of roses, among many other gifts. I have been an inveterate gardener for years, from that first six-pack of marigolds I bought at Home Depot in suburban Connecticut to laying out birthday rose gardens, planting fruit trees, and rescuing overgrown and underloved gardens, as well as building my own garden library with classic design texts, memoirs, and commentaries from gardeners and designers alike, and, well, just a few glossy coffee table indulgences. I have spent years getting to know California's Mediterranean garden landscapes, plants, and climate, even as I have fallen for English and continental garden design traditions, grown fond of the particularities and peculiarities of succulents, which perform so well in our climate, and learned to love and respect the quiet power of a Japanese garden. I have been active in local garden societies and visited botanical gardens across the country and around the world, believing not only in the benefits of gardening itself, but of being in the garden, and of being charmed by that special alchemy of plants, climate, soil, design, place, space, light, and shade. Gardens are a place where we can become more alive and more connected with the world we share with others. And, as the good book reminds us, it all began in a garden. Welcome to this week's show. We start this week's show with an article by Lisa Boone, published earlier this month on June 10th in the Los Angeles Times. The most recent in their plants series, Water-Hungry Lawns Are Symbols of Los Angeles's Past. In this series, we spotlight yards with alternative low-water landscaping built for the future. Her water bill was insane, so she tore out her lawn and planted a wabi-sabi wonderland. Julia Lee had no need for a new garden when she and her husband purchased their Cheviot Hills home 8 years ago. The traditional 1950 home came with mature tropical plants in the back and a sprawling grass hillside lawn in front, and it suited them just fine. But as drought and wildfires dragged on in California in recent years, she started to question whether keeping the thirsty lawn made sense. "Our water bill was insane," she says, as she offers a tour of the former lawn, which is now filled with colorful native plants and drought-tolerant plants. "It was a waste of space. Our kids were growing older and didn't play on the lawn. There was just no reason to keep a big green lawn." After reading a Time story about Georg Kochi, a retiree who swapped his Koreatown lawn with plants suited for California, Lee was inspired by Kochi's wild wabi-sabi-style garden, which embraces the art of imperfect beauty. "I'm into chaos," Lee says, bending down to smell the minty fragrance of a native woolly blue curls, Trichostema lanatum shrub. "It's an accurate reflection of my personality." So in 2022, Lee decided to replace her lawn with a drought-tolerant landscape using the LADWP Free Landscape Design Program, now called the Landscape Efficiency Assistance Program, for help. She also applied for the Metropolitan Water District's Turf Replacement Rebate, which was $3 per square foot at the time. now $5, and got $5,310 back when the garden was finished. She wanted to learn more about native plants, so she took a garden design class at the Theodore Payne Foundation for Native Plants in Sun Valley. But the class felt overwhelming. "I love Theodore Payne," she says, "but I hate measurements and trying to figure out hardscape. I'm not a math person. The instructor wanted us to use a compass and draw a scale drawing of the whole lawn, and I thought, I can't do this." Feeling paralyzed, she thought about hiring someone to help her, even though she didn't want to spend the money on a landscape designer. But when Lee shared her frustrations with her graduate school advisor, noted author and avid gardener Jamaica Kincaid, she got the encouragement she needed. "She told me to do it myself," Lee said, as she designed her own gardens herself. And they are idiosyncratic, just like she is. With encouragement from Kincaid, Lee, 49, began planting small sages that would grow quickly and help prevent erosion, since water, mulch, and rain often ran down the hillside to the sidewalk. She also spread Theodore Payne's Rainbow Mix wildflower seeds throughout the landscape, including California poppies, royal lupin, desert bluebells, and clarkia. In the spring, the yard was full of colorful wildflowers, but for the rest of the year, it stayed dormant. People loved it because it was like a wildflower meadow in the middle of the city, she says. Walking through Lee's garden as birds, bees, and butterflies zoom around the yard's bright flowers, it's obvious she loves color. With help from her friend Ben Liu, who replaced his lawn with native plants, Lee filled the space with a lively mix of sages and flowering perennials, including yellow bladder pod, pink Palmer's penstemon, blue California lilac, and poppies. Also in the mix, there are California poppies, Channel Island tree poppies, and tall Matilaha poppies that look like fried eggs. She was surprised to find that working in her garden helped her connect with her neighbors in unexpected ways. "I was worried the neighbors would complain," she says, "but I've met so many people because I'm out here every day. Other gardeners are curious and often ask me, 'What's that interesting yellow plant?' 'Oh, Palmer's Indian Mallow.' I even know all the dogs' names now." When she and her gardener sheet mulched the front yard with cardboard Amazon boxes she had collected from her neighbors in October, one neighbor joked that it looked ready for Halloween. "She told me it looked like a graveyard," Lee says, laughing. Not all the plants survived, partly because half the garden is shaded by a large magnolia tree on the parking strip. Lee estimates she lost about 70% of her plants in the first year because she didn't water enough. "The very first year, you're supposed to water regularly, and I did not hand water enough, so everything basically died. The water bill went down dramatically." 3 years later, after losing so many plants, she decided to add an irrigation system. Liu and her gardener helped Lee install it and build a bioswale to catch rainwater, using stones from Valley Builder Supply and some large rocks from Bourget Brothers. "We installed it in one day," she says. "It was my birthday present to myself." At first, she was nervous about adding something so different from the other traditional lawns on her street. "There weren't any other houses that had anything like that," she says. "But now I like it because it breaks up the front lawn into separate planting sections. She can also walk down the bioswale to work in the garden. I find garden maintenance so relaxing," she adds. "It's meditative." Lee says plants help her connect with people. One neighbor who knew the home's previous owner gave her succulents. Another brought her some aromatic California sagebrush, also called cowboy cologne. "I really like the fact that I can point to certain things and remember who gave them to me," she says. "That's really nice." She hopes the golden yarrow will spread, and she's especially proud of the large white sage she grew from seeds that a friend gave her. "It's so happy over there," she says, clearly excited by its growth. "Look how big it is. I am so proud of it." Not all the plants in the unamended soil are California natives or even drought tolerant. Lee kept some plants that had been growing in the yard for decades, like the jasmine climbing around the front of the house, as well as the white roses. "I really don't like lantana," she says, "but I hate killing things." Someday, she hopes to set up a free seed library, and she's excited to see bluebird hatchlings in the bluebird house that Venice beekeeper Ian Kimbrey installed in her tree. "I just need to be patient," Lee says about the bluebird box, which is still empty. "I've entered that phase in my life where I just love to see so many birds and bees and other animals in my garden. It's good for my mental health." She also wants to add a water feature where birds and butterflies can bathe and dip and sip, and she plans to plant more berries to attract more pollinators. Lee, who grew up in L.A. and teaches English at Loyola Marymount University, says her unkempt garden reminds her of Los Angeles in some ways. "Everybody just wants to look young and perfect all the time, and that's not healthy," she says. "My garden is beautiful in the spring, then it goes dormant in the summer, and that's okay." She hopes her story will encourage others who can't afford a landscape designer or simply feel overwhelmed by the idea of replacing their lawn. "I think sometimes it's helpful just to have somebody who's there to hold your hand," she says of her friend Liu. "For me, that was critical. I don't think I would have ever made any progress without him." The project was ultimately about more than just saving water. It gave Lee a chance to connect with her community while experimenting in what she calls a test garden. She calls her garden a work in progress, and although she has suffered failures along the way, she values the friendship she's made outside her front door. "My garden doesn't look designed because it isn't. I've learned it's okay if things aren't perfect." Actually, she says, an imperfect, always evolving garden is a good lesson for life. Plants used in this garden include the following: California native shrubs and flowers, Coulter's Matilaha poppy, Rhamnea coulteri, Pigeon Point coyote bush, Baccharis pilularis pigeon point, Twin Peaks number 2 dwarf coyote bush, Baccharis pilularis Twin Peaks number 2, Lilac verbena de la mina, Verbena lilacina de la mina, Armstrong California fuchsia, Epilobium canum Armstrong, Marin pink California fuchsia, Epilobium canum marin pink, Burt's Bluff California fuchsia, Epilobium canum, Catalina California fuchsia, Epilobium catalina, Hummingbird sage, Salvia spathacea, California sagebrush, Artemisia californica, California buckwheat, Eriogonum fasciculatum, red buckwheat, Eriogonum grande variety rubensens, Warner Lytle buckwheat, Eriogonum fasciculatum, Warner Lytle, ashy leaf buckwheat, Eriogonum cinereum, seacleaf buckwheat, Eriogonum parvifolium, Ceanothus Julia Phelps, Yankee Point Carmel Ceanothus, Ceanothus Thrice Floris variety Griseus Yankee Point, Coyote Mint Monardella Veosa, Woolly Blue Curls Trichostema lanatum, Golden Currant Ribus Aurarum variety Gracili Limum, Bush Monkey Flower Diplacus longiflora, Jelly Bean Red and Pink and Orange and Fiesta Marigold, Monkey Flower Diplacus Jelly Bean Red, etc., Canyon Prince Giant Rye, Elemis Condensatus Canyon Prince, Island Alum Root Heuchera Maxima, Santa Ana Cardinal Alum Root Heuchera Santa Ana Cardinal, California Bee Plant Scrofularia Californica, California Huckleberry Vaccinium Ovatum, Common Snowberry Symphoricarpos Albus variety Levigatus, fragrant pitcher sage, Lepicinia fragrans, whirly blue Cleveland sage, Salvia clevelandii whirly blue, celestial blue Cleveland sage, Salvia clevelandii celestial blue, Winifred Gilman Cleveland sage, Salvia clevelandii Winifred Gilman, Alan Chickering Cleveland sage, Salvia clevelandii Alan Chickering, Bees Bliss sage, Salvia Bees Bliss, Mrs. Beard creeping sage, Salvia so nomensis Mrs. Beard, Russian sage, Salvia Yankee Yangii, Santa Barbara Mexican bush sage, Salvia Lucantha Santa Barbara, deer grass, Muhlenbergia rigens, California bush sunflower, Encelia californica, Margarita B.O.P. penstemon, penstemon heterophyllus, Margarita B.O.P., Palmer's Indian mallow, Abutilon palmeri, Island mallow, Malva acer gentiflora, white sage, Salvia apiana, black sage, Salvia mellifera, butterfly sage, Buddleia, California yarrow, Achillea millefolium, oregano, Oreganum vulgare, French lavender, Lavandulus dentata, bush anemone, Carpinteria californica, Channel Islands tree poppy, Dendromycon hartfordii, manzanita, blue grama, Butelua gracilis, Showy Island snapdragon, Gambilia speciosa, and bladder pod, Cleomela arborera. Wildflowers, native and not native, include California poppies, Escoltzia californica, blue globe gilia, Gilia capitata, elegant clarkia, Clarkia unguiculata, farewell to spring clarkia, Clarkia moena, cornflowers, Centaurea cyanus, Theodore Payne's rainbow mix wildflower seeds, Indian summer black-eyed Susan, Rudbeckia hirta, Indian summer, cosmos, Cosmos B. pinnatus, and various bread seed poppies, Papiva somniferum. An article in the plant series about replacing lawns, this one written by Lisa Boone and published on June 10th in the Los Angeles Times. Her water bill was insane, so she tore out her lawn and planted a wabi-sabi wonderland. We turn next to an article by Claire Coulson, published on June 18th in the Financial Times of London, in their gardens section. How do you mix flower arranging, dancing, and Darwinism? Ask Emily Avenson. The Californian's otherworldly workshops in the gardens of her Belgian chateau are drawing flower lovers and gardeners from around the globe. Each of Emily Avenson's floral arrangements begin with a single flower, a beguiling burgundy pansy with a flaming central eye, or a jagged lilac tulip with curving petals and splashes of deepest pink and peach. These focal flowers, or dancers, as she sometimes refers to them, are also the stars of her garden, which she has made over the past years in rolling hills near Liège, Belgium. Stretching out from the kitchen is a textural sea of Stipa tenuissima around large domes of box. Flowers hover above the grasses, a succession of tulips, brown sugar, La Belle Époque, Ridgedale, and Blue Heaven among them, is followed by bearded iris, bronze fennel, campanula, thalictrum, echinacea, asters, and Japanese anemones. It was wonderful to have a framework, she says, of the towering and precisely clipped hornbeam hedges that enclose the space and provide a crisp foil to the constantly in motion grasses. This is a survival of the fittest garden. I don't have an irrigation system. If you survive, awesome. If you don't, I'll find a replacement. The floral designer left her native California 20 years ago to join her Dutch husband in rural Belgium. They'd originally met as teenage pen pals. Having no real experience as a gardener, she started with a small veg patch before raising easy annuals, including cosmos, nigella, and sweet peas for their wedding. We ended up supplementing things by going to a local cutting garden, but I really enjoyed the process of growing the flowers. Shortly after, she discovered an online community of florists who were growing their own blooms and designing naturalistic seasonal arrangements. Florette Farms' Aaron Benzekine, Sarah Rihannon of New York studio Saipua, and UK-based Suzanne Hatwood of The Blue Carrot. She was inspired to launch her own venture and started with weddings, but swiftly realized creating identical arrangements for 20 tables wasn't for her. Then someone asked if she'd consider hosting classes, and her floral design studio, Floropian, was born. Avenson's signature style of loose and airy arrangements have an alchemic intensity of color and tone. People now travel from around the world to attend her workshops. They include the 5-day artist's retreat with floral demonstrations, botanical dyeing and collaborative projects, and an intensive 5-day course tilted more toward professionals with an in-house photographer and model. They can walk away with a full portfolio to launch their business, said Avanson. Chateau Wodemont, which the couple bought in 2020, has become an evocative and picturesque setting for the residential courses and a place to grow all the flowers. Avanson first saw the chateau listed for sale in 2018. By the following year, the estate had been subdivided, enabling them to buy the chateau and then add additional parcels, including a farmhouse later. We fell in love with the dream of having gardens, a studio, and accommodation all in one space. The chateau dates from 1063, when it was a military fortress. Huge balustrades circled the rear of the property above dense woodland. Residential wings were added in the 17th and 19th century. Roses were an early passion. In a warm courtyard, Avanson has filled large wooden planters with her favorite floribunda and hybrid tea roses for cutting. Honey Dijon, Coco Loco, Champagne Moments, Sally Holmes, and the pale caramel-colored Julia's Rose. Not the most productive, she says, but so beautiful. Alongside Rosa Mutabilis, which she uses as much for its foliage as for the coppery pink flowers. Above them are rambling Cecile Brunner roses and clematis. Underneath, spring bulbs are followed by ranunculus and pansies, including antique shades, which, supported by rose undergrowth, can grow tall stems. They are forced to stretch up for the light. Over the wall, in a smaller courtyard adjoining her cavernous stone barn workroom, is a secret garden. Here, irises bask in the heat of a south-facing wall. Narrow borders around outbuildings provide more opportunities to pack in plants for cutting. There are foxgloves, clematis, and roses underplanted with a succession of bulbs, then asters she can use for cutting as late as November. I squeeze it all in, for better or worse, she says, of the intensely packed ground. On the north-facing side of the building, Avanson plants more delicate spring-flowering perennials and her favorite heucheras in various tones. But it's up in her south-facing field that she has the main areas for cutting. Dahlias, which she lifts each year as they are too susceptible to slugs and voles, are one of the few monocultures. Self-sowers are actively encouraged. But in the majority of beds, she takes a novel approach. Those that are long and narrow are densely planted, often in color combinations designed for arrangements. In one purple-toned bed, Hesperus is interplanted with delphiniums and scabiosus. I plant in a way that inspires you as you're cutting, but I also think about shapes. There is a vertical element, or focal flower, and then around it will be the dancers. As part of the artist retreat, she takes the group to the market in Visay to source ingredients for a Dutch master's arrangement. In the garden, inspiration for an arrangement can come from the vegetables planted among the flowers. Trusses of berries or cherry tomatoes are a favorite, or in late summer, borlotti beans with their speckled burgundy markings. The beans and pods might appear with phlox crème brûlée or cherry caramel. They communicate beautifully, color-wise, says Avanson. I just kind of see everything as an experiment of how far you can push planting schemes. Along another sun-baked wall is a border of favorite irises, underplanted with foxgloves, dianthus, martagon lilies, and voguish amazing gray poppies. When I visit, the fattening iris buds are about to burst into life and anticipation is high. Her favorite bicolor blooms seg poetically across what she calls confused colors, from lilac to lemon, from white to olive, and from coffee to an iridescent mauve. These otherworldly combinations are catnip to the designer, inspiring her next arrangement. Their unusual hues are almost impossible to improve upon. Nature, she says, has already done the work. Emily Avanson's top tulips. Tulips that look great in a vase aren't always the ones that are brilliant for a border. Interesting forms, subtle color gradations, and unusual hues are valuable qualities in tulips that can blend seamlessly with other spring flowers. The most coveted and unusual tulips tend to sell out long before planting season in autumn, so order early. Most companies are happy to schedule delivery at a date closer to planting. Vovos, a little-known cultivar in very late blooming, with an unusual parrot tulip shape in mauve to peach tones. Its shorter stems make it less effective in a border, but perfect for a vase. Brown sugar, beautiful deep orange scented flowers on tall dark stems. It also perennializes well if planted into borders. Brasil, an extraordinary peony-shaped flower that segs from deep plum through fiery orange, associates well with brown sugar in an arrangement. Copper image, another warm tone double with peony-shaped flowers in copper flushed with pink. Blue heaven, a new variety with goblet-shaped flowers in an unusual lilac blue that fades over time. Each stem has up to 5 flowers and combines wonderfully with other lilac blooms. Ridgedale, rich ruby tones with tints of gold, prefers an area of light shade if planted outside. Coral blush, the perfect shade of soft peach mixed with blush pink, very valuable to add spring softness to any arrangement. Avant-garde, an honorable mention of this new bulb for anyone afraid of yellow, a buttery bloom that combines well with other spring yellows, as well as blush, peach, and blue. And La Belle Époque, romantic pale coffee and pink hues, and very useful to bring almost all spring colors together in an arrangement. An article by Claire Colson, published on June 18th in the Financial Times of London, How Do You Mix Flower Arranging, Dancing, and Darwinism? Ask Emily Avanson. We close this week with an article by Carolyn Dunster, published on the 24th of June. Did you know about the other Chelsea Flower Show? The month of May is generally considered to be the highlight of the horticultural year, not least when the Royal Horticultural Society swoops in to take over the grounds of the Royal Hospital to stage the Chelsea Flower Show. But after the annual razzmatazz wraps up and the crowds disperse, there are gardening activities that continue in a private area of the estate and which generate their own gentler buzz. There is even a competition with its own esteemed judging panel and sponsors. The 66-acre estate was designed by Sir Christopher Wren in the late 1600s to provide a home for soldiers broken by age and war, British Army veterans now known as the Chelsea Pensioners. At its heart is a walled area of 1.5 acres known as the Yard. Here, a series of large, temperature-controlled glasshouses is surrounded by 30 raised beds and 28 allotment plots. These are looked after by the pensioners. Every day, two pensioners set to work in the glasshouses, tending and watering the plants under the supervisory eye of Rick Glenn, head of grounds and gardens, and his team of four. We wouldn't be able to manage without our volunteer gardeners in the glasshouses and the wider grounds, he says. The work is both skilled and therapeutic. Some pensioners get involved knowing nothing, so we train them. And others, who have been gardening all their lives, are able to teach me a thing or two. He cites Paul, a collector of rare orchids whose plants are on display in the temperate glasshouse. The unheated seedling glasshouse, meanwhile, serves as a community hub where there's lots of general conflab about who is growing what. Here, gardening is much more than growing plants, says Glenn. It's about providing a sense of purpose, community, and fellowship. In another cool-zoned house, hundreds of scarlet pelargoniums, the color of the pensioners' coats, are in bloom and about to be bedded out. They are joined by pots of horse chestnut trees that have been dug up by pensioners as saplings and are being nurtured with a view to selling them in the on-site shop. Any pensioner with a passing interest in gardening can apply to look after a raised bed or allotment. Some of the beds are at hip height to make tasks easier for those who have trouble bending or are gardening from a wheelchair. Colorful flowers dominate, but vegetables and herbs are not forgotten. A few allotments are also tended by children from the local primary school. The cross-generational chatter and interaction is wonderful, says Glenn. The pensioners are passing on their skills to the gardeners of the future. The pensioners' own flower show is highly competitive fun. This year, the judging panel included Justin Dennis, head gardener at the Charterhouse Almshouse, John Sunnier, head gardener at the British Ambassador's Residence in Washington, and Chicago-based sustainable landscape gardener and florist Hannah Kate. Winner of the Best Ornamental Allotment this year and Best Overall Winner was Patrick, a sprightly 89-year-old who has been living at the Royal Hospital for 13 years. Surnames have not been shared for safeguarding. He tends one of the largest allotments and has been gardening since he married the daughter of a head gardener, aged 21. My father-in-law taught me everything I know, he says. Patrick is a rose grower. He gives them a liquid seaweed feed once a week and removes every damaged, diseased, or yellowing leaf by hand. I want my leaves to be as shiny as my marching boots, he smiles. Despite a recent heart attack, Patrick is out on his allotment every day. His top tip for success is to plant bare root roses in the autumn in the pouring rain. Harkness Roses, the 145-year-old breeder and nursery based in Hertfordshire, which has been exhibiting at Chelsea for more than half a century, is one of the sponsors of the Pensioners Flower Show. In 2024, it launched the Chelsea Pensioner Rose, a bright red, repeat-flowering hybrid tea rose with a spicy scent. It was planted throughout the plots and in the wider grounds. It's tough and resilient, much like a Chelsea Pensioner, says Glenn. The Bushes have established well here and are performing splendidly. We just cut back the spent flowers and anticipate a second flush soon. Jim, 81, grows the rose in one of his ornamental beds. He has also created a mini pond garden in a separate bed and looks after a vegetable plot. This won first prize in the fruit and vegetable allotment category. He has been living at the Royal Hospital for 12 years, after an army career which began when he was 15. A self-taught gardener, he grows French beans and peas from seed that he saves from one year to the next, along with cabbages, cauliflowers, and potatoes, which he says he gives to friends and family. Winner of the best ornamental raised bed was Barbara, a former Forces psychiatric nurse who worked with soldiers living with severe mental illnesses. She arrived at the Royal Hospital as the fifth female Chelsea pensioner. "As soon as I arrived, I knew it was a good place," she says. Her health improved after rediscovering her passion for gardening, having once tended a small holding and allotment. "There isn't a day I don't go down to my plot. It gives me something to do. I can't imagine not having it." A newly spruced up area on the estate is the Prince of Wales Courtyard, now home to the 2025 Gold Award-winning garden designed by landscape architect Dave Green for the Chelsea Flower Show in collaboration with a group of the pensioner gardeners. A shady, tranquil woodland garden was shaped by their stories and experiences. A year on, it has also struck gold with the pensioners. "We're very proud of the garden," says veteran Alan. "We've been using it for gatherings and celebrations. Now summer has arrived. It is absolutely glorious." Fellow gardener Archie nods. "It gives me comfort." He just won the Best Balcony Garden Award. "I came to the Royal Hospital looking for an adventure, and one of the things that sold me was the wonderful gardening opportunities. Gardening here has given me my community, a place to create, and huge enjoyment." An article by Carolyn Dunster, published on the 24th of June in the Financial Times of London. Did you know about the other Chelsea Flower Show? And that wraps up edition 349 of Green and Growing in the Garden, the weekly gardening program produced for the Los Angeles Radio Reading Service. Please send your comments to www.larrs.org or email us at one word, laradioreading@gmail.com. Give us suggestions of gardens or stories to follow, your thoughts on a favorite story you heard, or what you think about the broadcast itself. Gardens are not just plants, soil, and irrigation. They speak to us of the world around us, even as we try to create order and impose structure. They connect us to our landscape and to the cycles of nature. They teach us patience, stewardship, and fortitude. They offer possibilities of beauty, of persistence, sometimes even of transcendence. And they open our senses to both the heart and the soul, to being alive, to being connected with other gardens, other gardeners, and other times. Whether in a container or in pots on a balcony in the city, in a defined, dedicated garden area, or planted around a suburban house or in an urban courtyard, or in spaces surrounded by trees, landscape, and open sky. Gardens are precious indeed, no matter where they are. I'm Hugh Ralston, your host. Thanks for joining us. Until the next time.